This is the Pitch Vision Academy show number 86. This is the Pitch Vision Academy cricket show. You can find us at pitchvision.com and email us on mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. My name's David Hinchliffe in the UK.
And I'm Kevin Sampad in Australia. Coming up on the show, David talks about his first team experience. And we answer your questions for this week. David, you haven't been captaining this week, but of course that's of no fault of yours. It's even better. You've been playing in the first team because the first team's keeper has injured his finger or something, wasn't it, David? How was it?
That's right. I got the call in the week, and during selection we all sat down together and the first team wicketkeeper had announced that he'd broken his little finger on his left hand, so he couldn't play. So we had a little chat about it, because there's a couple of guys who could do the job, you know, as sort of last-minute stand-in type wicketkeepers. Mm-hmm. And we decided, well, do you want a last-minute guy, or do you want someone who's doing it regularly every week? And they went for me. They decided to go for me, and we got someone to stand in as second team captain, and I was off with the first 11. Nice. And it went pretty well. We spent 50 overs bowling quite well and fielding absolutely brilliantly. Everybody fielded out of their skin. And the thing you notice when you step up, I don't know if you've ever played at a higher level than the normal level you play, Kev, but the thing you notice when you step up is the change in the intensity of the game.
Yeah.
Every sort of level you go up, every level I've gone up anyway, I've noticed how it gets a lot more intense as you move up. So, you know, everyone's sort of shouting and clapping and running around between overs and taking it a lot more seriously, another step up more seriously, if you like. So I enjoyed that because, you know, sometimes in second team cricket, the game can sort of saunter along a bit and everybody's having a good time, but it's not quite going the way that you, at the pace that you want it to be going at. So it's nice when everybody's a bit more focused and a bit more concentrated on what's going on. The other thing I noticed is that in second team cricket, even in good teams, you probably get four or five decent batsmen. Most teams, maybe you get two or three decent batsmen, and then you get a few also-rans, and then you get some real rabbits at the end. But in certainly in the game that we played, the opposition really didn't have any players who were also-rans at all, because we had the mate down at the end. So unless their number 11 was a real rabbit, then they didn't have anyone who was a real rabbit, and you know their good batsmen were really good. But it was a difficult wicket to bat on, and we bowled reasonably well, although we did bowl a few poor balls. Generally we bowled reasonably, and we got away with a lot because the fielding was so switched on, and we kept restricted them to 167 for 8 in their 50 overs.
So pretty good.
As you can imagine, they batted all the way through. It was a it was a difficult wicket to bat on because it was quite slow. It was a bit like I suppose the best way I could describe it is, you remember how the pitch was on the at the Cardiff Test during the Ashes in 2009. It was a little bit like that. It was breaking up a little bit, and it was a little bit sometimes one or two bounced through and sometimes one or two kept low, but generally it was okay if it was just a little bit slow.
Yeah.
But 167, not really enough. A couple of things I noticed when we were fielding is there's a lot more experience in the first team than there is in the second team. The second team is a decent side, but there's not a lot of captaincy experience. Whereas in the first team, apart from the actual captain, there's four guys who have captained the side at some point. Anyway, and me, who's the current second 11 captain. So there were five guys out of the 10 who weren't captain who had captaincy experience. And that really told, you know, there was a lot of advice flying around and a lot of sort of, oh, you know, you should be doing this, you should be doing that. And I was quite conscious of trying not to say too much other than just the general wicketkeeper encouragement type of stuff, because you don't want to, as captain of another team, you don't want another captain coming in and start making too many suggestions. But one thing that me and at least one of the other captains sort of agreed on, was that this captain is he doesn't quite keep up with the game. I mean, I don't want to criticise him, but if I would make one change, or if I could suggest something to him, I would say try and keep up with the game situation, because he'll set a field and then a wicket will fall, and then he'll keep the same field for the new batsman coming in, even when he set that field for a specific reason for the for that batsman. Like, you know, the batsman is driving well through the covers, so they put someone, a sweeper out, which is a very sensible idea. Stop the boundary, cut off his shot, very sensible idea. But then when when the new batsman comes in, you don't need that sweeper straight away. You either bring that sweeper back into the ring, or if you're feeling really confident, you put another slip in, and you say, right, come on, then we'll go for another wicket here. And I think he was a little bit slow on doing that. He was more focused on restricting the runs, I think, which is a big difference between my style of captaincy and his, in that my idea is you win games by bowling opposition out, whether you bat first or you bowl first. So the idea is to bowl them out as quickly as possible for as few runs as possible. And the way you do that is to attack. All right, if you're bowling first, you can't go all out attack and have five slips and a short leg and two gullies. But you could easily have four close catches for a new batsman. I mean, that's not leaving massive gaps. Okay, you might have your gap, but it's not leaving massive gaps. And we, as the game went on, as the game proceeded, we, at one point we had a new batsman in and there was only one close catcher. We had a slip. And okay, it was fairly late in the game, but they weren't exactly rollicking along at five and over. So, I probably would have had one if a new batsman comes in. It's a slow wicket. You put in a short mid wicket, short extra cover, at least one slip in a gully, maybe two slips in a gully, and say, right, there you go. Hit it through the covers. Give it a biff from first ball, because most batsmen can't give it a biff from the first ball.
David, as you mentioned about all these fielding positions and things you would have done, when you were keeping in this game, did you sort of have like a practice run of thinking of things you would have done even if you weren't going to relay your information to the captain, because you didn't want to sort of undermine him in any way? But were you thinking of ways during the game of what you could have done, which is sort of get you prepared if you face the same kind of situations in your games back in the second team?
Definitely. I chatted it through. There was a chap who used to be the first team captain in the slips, and we were chatting things through, and he said, oh, you know what I'd have here? I'd have a man catching on in front of the wicket on the offside instead of a second slip. And I was thinking that exact same thing. So, it's good when someone sort of backs that up. And the captain also did a couple of things, which maybe I would have been a bit slower to do. He dropped a third man down fairly quickly. When I probably would have kept a slip in, another slip in. But, I didn't really think about third man. And when he put the third man in, I thought, that is quite a good position for this situation in the game, because it was about 35 overs and they were trying to score quickly and they were working the ball down through the third man area. So, it made sense, and he saved quite a few runs going down there that I probably would have let go in the effort to get extra wickets. So, you're learning as you're going along. Of course you are. So if his mindset is, I just want to restrict the score. I know they're going to bat the 50 overs. I'm not bothered about bowling them out. All I want to do is restrict the score to as low as possible. Then, his tactics made sense most of the time.
Yeah.
But that's slightly different from my theory, which is where you've got to bowl the opposition out. So you've got to attack a little bit more.
Yeah.
So then we batted and we knocked them off fairly easily, although there was a bit of a wobble. We went from 60-odd for one to 70-something. I haven't got the details in front of me, but we went from 60-odd to one to 70-odd for five in very short time. We were a bit unlucky. The captain was out giving out LBW when he hit it, and I was watching the game at the time, and I heard, I heard the hit from the boundary.
Yeah.
So I, as he was walking off, I said to the guy sitting next to me, that must have been pad onto bat, because the noise is so wooden. It sounded, it couldn't have just purely been bat. And when the batsman came off, I mean, no, the batsman never thinks it's out LBW, but he came off, he said, I did hit it first. Then the next guy was out, bowled off his elbow. He went to leave an off cutter. It cut back in, hit him on the elbow, and just knocked the off bail off the stump.
Yeah.
So he was out then. And then the next guy was out, LBW, and he also says he hit it. I didn't hear that one. I was watching the game, but I didn't hear that one. But when he came off, he said, "Yeah, I definitely hit it first." So yeah. I think we're probably a bit unlucky. You can't really say it was cheating or anything like that because they were in the first team. You have neutral umpires, so you know I'm not trying to suggest anyone was cheating there. But yeah. I think we just had, you know, we didn't have the rub of the green in that particular period. But then luckily the number seven batsman is a very, very good batsman, and to be honest, he shouldn't be batting at number seven, but he was drafted in last minute because somebody dropped out, and him and our team professional knocked them off with only one chance, only one drop catch, which was quite a sharp one as well. It was a one-handed diving one, which would have been a hell of a catch if he caught it, but he spilled it, and they went on to knock them off quite comfortably. We won with about four or five overs to spare.
Nice.
So that's good as well, because you know it shows that even after a wobble, you know, if you've got batsmen who know what they're doing and they don't pack, then you can play under pressure and still score runs easily.
Yeah.
So it was good to see that as well, you know, as a new sort of relative newcomer or occasional player in the first team. To be part of a side with the mental strength to be able to get through a wobble like that is excellent.
Yeah. And I guess there's a lot of things you can take from this first team experience, and I'm sure you played in many other times. Back to your second team as well, David, coming up. I'm interested to know, did you follow up on how your second team went over the weekend? Did they have a win or loss without you?
Yes, I kept on top of that, obviously. Yeah, constant telephone contact. Well, I phoned through at the break and I phoned through at the end. And we performed excellently without my captaincy. So what I'm putting that down to is I prepared the team so well that they no longer need me.
That's great reasoning, David. But we have a couple of questions coming up, so we should get straight into them.
Yeah, sure.
Welcome to the question section for this week. David, our first question is from Brendan, and he says, I'm a right-arm medium-fast bowler who after an extended break has come back to the game, and I've been working very hard in the nets getting my fitness up and back into shape. However, since I've started bowling, I seem to have a recurring hamstring issue on my front leg. This last time I rested it for 6 weeks, and then now after my third session back, I've strained it again. I would really appreciate it if you could help me and provide me with some thoughts that I could work with to try and stop this issue. Thanks for your time and help. David, do you think this recurring hamstring issue is because of an inconsistency in his bowling action or his bowling run-up, or does he just have a crook hamstring that tends to injure itself every time he goes out and plays?
It's quite hard to say. This is an individual question, and it's very hard to say without, A, being a physiotherapist, and B, not being able to see his bowling action. But we can talk a bit more generally about these things. Hamstring issues are normally occurring because the hamstring is relatively weak compared to the muscles on the opposite side of the leg.
Yeah.
So generally speaking, you would want to look to strengthen your hamstrings, improve the strength of your hamstrings while maintaining the strength and the flexibility of the rest of your leg, so they balance back, so everything balanced back out again. There's a few different ways to do that. Once you're back from injury, then you know, once you've recovered properly, and if you need a recovery program from a physiotherapist, make sure that you go through that in its entirety, and then get back to training in the right way. So when I say training in the right way, it means start training as quickly as possible you can once the hamstring has recovered. Even if it's not fully recovered, you can still do sort of gentle, you know, swimming and jogging and things like that. And then when you are ready to go, have a look at, first of all, how you live your life day to day, which might seem like a strange thing to say, but we'll come back to that. And second of all, what type of training you're doing. How you live your life day to day? Well, we sort of live in a world where you spend a lot of time sitting down. So, you know, you're driving your car or you're sitting at your computer or whatever. So that can lead to hamstrings which are relaxed all the time, while the muscles at the front of your leg are tensed up a lot more because your hip is bent and you're in that sitting position. So that can weaken the hamstring. So if you just stand up and walk around a bit, a few times a day, you know, every half an hour, just stand up and have a little walk around. If you spend a lot of time sitting, then that makes a big difference to the strength of your hamstrings because you're using them more often. Yeah. And then in the gym, then what you don't want to be doing is sitting on the hamstring curl machine and then the leg extension machine and trying to do all those kind of things, because those things aren't reflecting what you're doing on the cricket pitch anywhere near what you should be doing. So, you know, if you do sort of hip extension type training, then that will strengthen up your hamstrings. It'll teach them how to fire at the right moment instead of them being weak. And then you want to make sure that your hips are nice and mobile as well, so you've got a full range of movement. So when you've got strong hamstrings, they're also flexible as well. The hamstrings will naturally be more flexible anyway, especially if you spend a lot of time sitting down, because then they're extended a lot of the time. So work on the flexibility of the other movement of your hips. So things like, there's that traditional exercise, isn't there, where you pull you hold onto your ankle and you pull your heel up towards your bum, and that stretches the front of your leg. Exercises like that, stretching exercises like that, and mobility exercises like that as well, where you're not just stretching and holding it in a static way, but you're stretching while you're moving. So then that's important as well. Do lots of running as close as you can get to the conditions that you'll be running in on a cricket pitch. So if you presumably, you know, you're going to be playing on turf. So if you're playing on turf, then make sure that you're running on grass in your spikes and you're running at the pace that you run in at when you do running. So you can do sort of interval style training where you run in, but you don't actually bowl. You could even do interval style training where you run in, you jump over something, you know, a small hurdle or something like that. You know, one of those little mini hurdles that are just off the ground.
Yeah, yeah.
Not a full height hurdle. And that just will sort of reflect what you do when you're bowling without actually going through your action. That's just in case there's something in your action which is causing the problem.
Yeah.
And do sprints. Sprints are really important for making sure your hamstrings are strong. Build it up. Don't just, you know, go out onto the field and start doing sprints. But if you're doing a warm-up either before training or before going to the gym or before playing a match, always finish off with at least 5 or 6 all-out sprints over 10 or 20 metres. Really go for it. You can even, if you're doing it during training and you can find someone else who wants to do it, you can make it competitive, because the more competitive you make it, the faster you try and run. So, you know, if it's just right, everyone gets together at the end of the warm-ups, right, okay, before we start batting and bowling, we're going to have a race. Everyone get into pairs, you line everybody up, and they have a 20 meter sprinting race, and then whoever wins the heats goes through to the final. You know, make it as competitive as you can. It's amazing how competitive people get over silly little things like that, but they will. And it's also teaching you to go at full pace. So when you are out in the middle and you're fielding at cover and someone smashes it past you and you turn and you head off at full pace because you can see the ball isn't quite going to trickle over the line, so you're going to have to go after it at full pelt, your hamstring doesn't ping because you've never run at full pelt before.
Yeah.
But it is important to build up to that. You don't want to just start sprinting. You want to gradually build up to, you know, from sort of walking to jogging to running to faster running and then to all-out sprinting.
Hi, David, our next question is from K-Man, and he says, I'm 15 and just wondering how much strength training I should do. Now, David, I know we've spoken about this before, and we said It's never too sort of early to start strength training, but how much do you reckon a 15-year-old should do? Should he not do too much to overload himself, or can he do as much as he wants?
Well, the first question I would ask, what is your aim? What is your goal? Why do you want to strength train? Because he might have just heard strength training is a good thing and he should do it. In which case, we need to be a little bit more directed. At the age of 15, yes, you can do strength training, but yet, as we've talked about before, you do have to be careful when you're doing it, but not in maybe the way that you think you have to be careful. As we've again discussed before, it's not bad for you to do strength training if you're under 18. It's just that there's certain things which are better for you than other things. So, rules of thumb, first of all, generally 2 or 3 times a week is fine. If you're playing cricket 4 times a week, then maybe once, if you get in a one training session, you've done well. If you're playing, if you happen to be in the height of the summer and you're playing 4 games a week, then the last thing you want to do is knack yourself out by trying to do strength training. Then in the off season, maybe you're focusing on it a little bit more. If his goal is to get stronger, just generally be stronger, because a lot of, especially teenagers, you want to be teenage boys, you want to be stronger. That's it's kind of like, you might see boys the same age as you who are much stronger than you. So you think, well, if I get into the gym, then maybe I can catch up with those guys, because they're ahead of me. So that would change things as well if that's your goal. So, and again, that would change the number of times you would do a week and how long the sessions would be. And also how much you've done before. That's the other key factor. How much training you've done before. If you've been training since you were 11, then it will be different for if you're just looking to start training now. Most people around this age, the general recommendation would be do body weight exercises, work on your core. That's a good general recommendation because most people can do, body weight squats and press ups and things like that quite easily. You don't need much equipment. Maybe you need a branch to hang on if you're doing chin ups, or maybe you can invest in a chin up bar, but you don't really need very much equipment. But there's nothing to stop you from doing resistance training with a barbell or a dumbbell or a sandbag. But the thing you have to remember with resistance exercise is just not to go too heavy. The important thing at the age of 15 is to be working on technique, because if you're getting your technique right weightlifting, then your muscles will be getting stronger in the right way and you won't be learning poor technique. If you put a barbell on your back and squat and it's a really ugly, horrible squat, then there's no point in adding extra weight until you've got the technique right. So focus on technique. You can work in a low rep range if you like. You can work in a 5 rep range, but what you don't want to be doing is absolutely slamming huge amounts of weight onto the bar and trying to heft the weight with a poor technique, because you're increasing your chances of getting injured in that way. And then further down the line, you'll have to go back to the original weight anyway, unless you want to hurt yourself. So, to sum it all up, if you want to talk generally, then you would say 2 to 3 times a week, plenty of body weight training. Don't be afraid of using dumbbells and barbells, as long as you're doing them with the right technique and you're not going for maximum lifts. You're aiming for technique. And although you can't really go too far wrong with the 3 sets of 10 reps, that's not ideal for everybody. So you might want to look at how exactly you work out the set and rep schemes. And there is a way of doing that. There is a way of working that out if you buy the strength and conditioning for cricketers at all levels on Pitch Vision Academy. Then that gives you all the options on the different set and rep schemes that you can do. So do have a look at that if you're not quite sure where you want to go with set and rep schemes, or talk to someone who's experienced at training people who play cricket. That is quite important. Even if it's not people who play cricket, just people who have athletic endeavours, shall we say? You know, because there's a world of difference between a bodybuilder or someone who's going to the gym just to, you know, maybe lose a bit of weight, compared to someone who's going to the gym to A, avoid injury, and B, get stronger and faster on the cricket pitch.
Well, David, our last question for this week is another sort of fitness question. It's from Paul, and he says, I've been feeling a bit stiff in the hips. What do you recommend to loosen them up before a game or training? David, there's a couple of stretches you could do. Maybe even would foam rolling help? I know you're a big fan of that. What do you reckon Paul should do?
Yeah, definitely. I think a good way of reading this question is, he says, how can I do it before the game and after training and after the games?
Yeah.
Well, I would say that if he's got stiff hips, then he shouldn't be focusing on his stiff hips just before and after training and playing. That's a good time to do it. But if he's got stiff hips, then he needs to think to himself, why are they stiff in the first place? Have they just become stiff? Or is there a reason that they've become stiff? Maybe like we were talking about before, he spends a lot of time sitting down. If you spend a lot of time sitting down, you're going to get stiff hips. You know, it's going to happen. I spend a lot of time sitting down, and I have to stretch out my hips sometimes, especially as a wicketkeeper. You know, you're spending a lot of time, you know, in the wicketkeeper crouching position, or you're doing it quite a lot. So, you know, you don't want to lose flexibility in your hips. So you have to work on it quite a bit. So, yeah, have a look at the whole picture and think to yourself, OK, why are they getting stiff in the first place? Walk around a bit more, you know, do be more active when you're not playing cricket. If you work in a job where you have to sit down a lot, get up out of your seat. If you're working a job or you spend a lot of time driving, you know, try and maybe travel in other ways now and again. If you can walk around the corner to the shop instead of jumping in the car, then why not? It might take an extra 5 minutes, but, you know, in the long run, it's better for you. So be a bit more active if you can. Stand up if you can. Walk around if you can. And then, foam rolling is excellent. You don't want to be doing it too much. The way I use foam rolling is I use it before every time I go to the gym, which is 3 times a week.
Yeah.
And then I do it on the morning of a match, usually sort of first thing in the morning, just to sort of get rid of that early morning heavy leg feeling that you get, you know, if you get up. And then if it's been a particularly hard game, then I'll probably do some on the Sunday, you know, just after the match, just to get the blood flowing again. So that will help, especially if you focus on the muscles that are around the hips. And the stretches are important. Before the game, do the mobility work. You know, that's the moving stuff, the things like walking lunges and the butt kicks and things like that. The different sort of warm up movements that you can do before the game, and then after the game, make sure you cool down and you have a good long static stretch. So you know, it's sometimes it can be hard to find somewhere to do that, especially if the rest of the team all pack up their kit, have a shower, pack up their kit, and rush off to the pub. But if you can find the time to, you know, the longer the better, really, but, you know, at least do 5 minutes of static stretching around your hips, both internal stretching and external stretching, as in, you know, stretching the hips by bringing your legs closer to your body and stretching the hips by moving the legs further away from the body. Any of those traditional stretches that you see on the internet will do a perfectly good job to help you improve your flexibility, which will stop your hips feeling so stiff. And the other thing, of course, is to make sure that you have a good, thorough warm-up, especially the older you get, the more you have to warm up to feel like you're ready to play. So, and that's as much psychological as it is physiological. Just sort of running around and getting your body moving is really important. So, you know, put the mobility exercises in during the warm-up and really go to town on making sure you're feeling nice and loose and ready to play, even if it's beyond what you would normally think is a good warm-up. You know, some people might think, well, you know, a couple of throws and, you know, a bowl a few balls and I'm ready to go. But if you warm up properly, then you'll be pretty out of breath at the end, especially if you finish with sprinting. you won't be gassed as such, but you know, you'll be pretty like, wow, I've warmed up really hard here. So
yeah,
you make sure you warm up hard. And maybe it sounds a bit strange, but yeah, make sure you warm up hard, and you are puffing and panting and sweating, and you've done a good decent warm up, and the blood is flowing around your body, because the body does a great job of loosening you up if you let it.
Mm.
Oh, and the last thing is train your core. Do core style training, planks, things like that, chops and lifts, things that we've talked about before. Make sure you've got a strong core, because when the core is strong, it's just one thing left less that you have to worry about. So you know, it might not have a direct influence on whether your hips feel stiff or not, but it's one thing less that you have to worry about overall. So you might as well make sure that your core's nice and strong, as well as your hips are nice and mobile, because everything works together in a kind of, you know, as one. You know, the body isn't separate things, it all works together as one, so make sure that the core is strong too.
Well, David, famous pitch vision competition is going to be pretty hard to pick a winner this week. We have three fitness questions from Paul, Cayman and Brandon, but who do you think will walk away with Pitch Vision Academy course this week, David?
Cayman, I think. It was a short and sharp question, but we did get plenty of discussion out of it. So, strength training for the under-18s, always an interesting topic.
Yeah, indeed it is, and I'm sure it'll help a lot of under-18s out there. And Cayman walks away with a course of his choice from Pitch Vision Academy. So all you have to do to win like Cayman is send in your question to mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. That's mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. Have podcast competition in the title, and you can walk away with a course from Pitch Vision Academy. And you could also get more information, tips, advice, and tricks on our website at www.pitchvision.com. The site is updated daily and includes forums to chat with other cricketers around the world. And you can also subscribe to the Pitch Vision Academy show for free on iTunes. Or you can click the link on the show's page that will take you directly to iTunes to subscribe. Stay tuned for our next show on the 9th of July. So if you want to get in touch with us, have any questions, or you want to enter the Pitch Vision Academy competition, please email us at mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. That's mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. Thanks for listening, and we hope to see you next time. So from Sydney, Australia, this is Kevin Sampad signing off.
And this is David Hinchliffe in the UK.